Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, September 29th, 2017, and a few hours ago, the Green Bay Packers rolled over the Chicago Bears 35-14, and even though I said good morning, it is actually still Thursday night, kind of, for Tom Silverstein and I. It is 2:24 a.m. as I pressed record on this, and we do this for you guys. You love the live blog, you love the podcast, so we'll stay up an extra hour, hour and a half, to make this happen for you. My name is Michael Cohen. This is the podcast. Tom, wake up. Wake up, Tom.
Sorry.
So a game happened, and it was a weird game in a lot of different ways.
It sure was.
I don't even know where to start. Where should we begin?
Well, you know, one thing I would say is the score did not reflect how the game necessarily was played. It reflected the fact that Chicago couldn't hold on to the ball.
Yes.
And that they had no passing game, much. You know, from a statistical standpoint, there wasn't that much difference. The Packers weren't that impressive offensively. Rodgers threw for four touchdowns, but it wasn't like they were dominating offensively. It's just Chicago was so bad, so terrible when it came to holding on to the football, and that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, so you had the two interceptions for Glennon. You had the sack fumble for Glennon. Mm-hmm. So three turnovers there. Am I missing any other ball security issues?
The snap that hit him in
That's
the
right.
shins.
And then the fumble was recovered by Blake Martinez. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about four turnovers in which Glennon was involved. And I was a little surprised they didn't throw Trubisky in there at the end just to see, get his feet wet, because, you know, reading John Fox's quotes after the game, it seems pretty clear that the Trubisky era is nearing.
Yeah. Maybe they just didn't want to put him in a game that probably wasn't winnable.
True.
Where the Packers were just going to be, you know, blitzing the heck out of him if they decided to start throwing the ball. Fox kind of conceded, you know, in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, by just running the ball. And it's good for guys like me who have Jordan Howard on their fantasy team. But other than that, I don't think anybody was too thrilled, except for us reporters who didn't want to see the clock stop.
You know, the Bears outgained the Packers in this game.
Yeah.
They had 308 yards to 260 for the Packers. And, you know, in terms of rushing yards, Green Bay finished with 91. But Rodgers, you know, you mentioned the four touchdowns, only 169 yards passing. But I sort of thought, you know, I was surprised, first of all, that Chicago was as sloppy as it was, given the fact that they came off this big win against Pittsburgh, 200 rushing yards. I thought they would be really thinking they could pull an upset tonight.
Me too.
And within, what, 8 minutes of the game starting, you could almost think that the sucker punch was there. So what happens is Green Bay goes down the field and scores. And then immediately, on the first play from scrimmage, Chicago tries to go deep, and you have the sack fumble for Clay Matthews that sets the franchise record for the Packers' most career sacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Packers score again. Within 50 seconds, I think they scored two touchdowns.
Yeah.
And it's 14-0. And I know the Bears had plenty of time to come back, but to me that almost felt like a turning point really early.
Oh, no question. And, you know, you have to think about mindset, too, on a Thursday game when you've played three games in a row and all of a sudden you get smacked in the face and you have to kind of pull yourself together, and it's hard. I think both teams, you know, you shoot your shot early on because it's all adrenaline, you know, based. And then everybody comes down to earth and everybody's tired and not as sharp as they should be. And the Packers, to get out to a 14-0 lead is, man, you couldn't buy a better start.
You know, we've joked a little bit in the past about how 70% of what we report on during the season is injuries, probably, you know, relative to the other things that we
Part
do.
Of the game.
And that was going to be a huge factor coming into this. You wrote about the offensive line and the backups in general that got some playing time tonight. So what did the Packers end up doing up front?
Well, I got to give them credit. You know, you and I touched on the possibility that Lane Taylor could play left tackle, but he had never played left tackle in college. And so that sort of ruled it out for me. Well, no, he started at left tackle and did a pretty darn good job.
I thought so, too.
Didn't give up a sack. I don't think he gave up a quarter. Well, there were no quarterback hits other than the two sacks.
Yep.
So no knockdowns. I thought his run blocking was pretty decent. They ran off the left side a number of times. And then to replace him, they put in Lucas Patrick. And he did a serviceable job. I didn't see any, any jailbreaks with him. I thought he actually was pretty solid. Justin McCray started at right tackle and had some more problems with pass rush, but, you know, they were able to survive it. Rodgers was not under duress. Now, this all comes with the caveat that they played double tight ends a lot, or
yes,
they used a tight end next to the tackle almost all night long. So they did sacrifice some of what they like to do on offense in order to protect Rodgers. Smart. The last thing, before I dominate this whole thing, is, and I noted this in my story, was it was much like when the Packers had to play Josh Sitton in 2015 in the Minnesota game that was
Week 17
the division.
Yep.
And you know, the guy who replaced Sitton in the lineup was Lane Taylor. He was not the starter, and so Sitton moved to left tackle and Lane Taylor moved to left guard. Well, you know, now what comes around goes around, and he had to make the move. So it was really interesting. He found out Tuesday, came in Tuesday morning, and James Campen told him, "You're starting at left tackle." And he said he just started watching film on left tackle and didn't panic.
You know, Lucas Patrick is the guy that we hadn't seen any of, you know, in terms of an actual game. This was the first time he's played in a game. And, you know, we saw in training camp a number of times, he gives up some plays. He gets beat here and there. But he kind of plays with, like, an edge and a little feistiness to him.
He's a tough SOB.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't take any crap.
And late in the game, I think he got into a couple scuffles. And you know, for what he might lack in quickness or athletic ability or whatever you want to call it, he plays ruggedly, and I think that worked to his advantage because, you know, we've talked about it on this podcast a number of times. The Bears have a good front seven, and I thought they didn't really show up tonight because this was a chance for them to generate a lot of pressure if they wanted to, and I don't think there's any doubt that they had more talent on the field than the Packers did on the O-line tonight, and they did nothing with it, essentially.
Not really. And, you know, Justin McCray is kind of a nasty guy, too.
Yeah.
Both of them are. You know, and I sort of said this at the end of my story, which is you don't want those guys to be your starting.
No.
Be starters on your offensive line this season. You know, maybe down the road they'll be starters. But, you know, for what they gave them last night is exactly what you got to have when you're in a dire situation. And it's invaluable for them later down the later in the season if they ever need them again. They've got legitimate reps. Neither of them had played an NFL snap coming into this year.
Yeah.
So
Lucas Patrick was a practice squad player, and Justin McCray hadn't even been on a 53-man roster.
In arena league last year.
Exactly.
So, you know.
And so, as I mentioned, injuries were the theme, and it continued pretty much from the very first drive for the Packers.
Yeah.
Ty Montgomery breaks his ribs on the very first play, stays in for five or six more snaps, and then succumbs to the pain, and we don't see him again.
Yeah.
What do you make of this running game now?
Well, I thought Jamal Williams was sluggish and not really very effective.
He just runs into guys.
Yeah, he just doesn't have enough wiggle. And, you know, I've been on this podcast calling for Aaron Jones, you know, almost every week. And he finally got his chance and did pretty well. You know, he didn't break any long ones, but he had scored a touchdown, 13 carries, 49 yards, 3.8 average, 11-yard long run. Given it was his first carries of his career, I think he scored a touchdown on his fourth carry. Not bad. Not bad. And I thought he showed some wiggle.
Yeah, you know? I think with Jones, you have a guy who, has a little bit more burst, I think, in the first couple steps. In other words, if there's a guy in the backfield or, you know, there's a hole where he needs to make a quick cut that wasn't the hole he was supposed to go through, I think he's got a little bit more agility to do that. And, you know, there was a quote from Aaron Rodgers that I thought was pretty complimentary. He said that there was one snap where Jones asked him to, either in the huddle or in the backfield, repeat which way he was supposed to motion because he forgot. But he said other than that, he didn't have to remind him of anything, didn't have to help him with anything, mm-hmm. that he thought Jones was pretty effective. And he said that he's been a Jones fan for a long time because he likes the way he runs the ball, thinks he's a pretty natural runner at the position.
That's what I think, too.
And I think, you know, he didn't have any catches tonight, but this is a guy that was pretty experienced as a receiver in college mm-hmm. at UTEP. And I don't know if he's done enough to replace, you know, Jamal Williams at number two, depending on how long Montgomery's out, but I think he's certainly earned his way into a rotation.
I think he did earn the number two spot, and given that Montgomery is going to be down, I mean, he's got broken ribs. I don't know. It's one thing for a receiver who
right.
only gets hit how many times a game?
Six, seven, eight at most,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, to be able to do it. Versus a running back who's going to get hit all the time. I also, and I'm going to ask you this question, is Ty Montgomery going to make it as a running back?
Boy, I mean, you know, you hate to predict injuries or anything like that, but you and I were talking about this the other day, and I said, I think this is the game where Montgomery's going to get hurt. I think something's going to go wrong. He doesn't seem to stay healthy. His snap count is so high. I really don't know. And so then I was talking to Pete Doherty, our columnist, about when Montgomery could come back, because he brought up exactly what you said. You know, this isn't a receiver. This isn't a DB. This is somebody that's going to get hit by big men at the line of scrimmage. And so I said, just a guess, I think he's done through the bye week. I think he gets 10 days to rest it now, and then he doesn't play the next three games, and then they essentially give him 5 weeks Ooh. To recover from this. I mean, I guess they could bring him back before the bye week, but mm-hmm. I don't really see the benefit. You know, the last game before the bye week is New Orleans. That shouldn't be a very difficult game for the Packers, especially with that New Orleans defense being, you know, catastrophic and catatonic. I don't know if he can make it as a running back. I mean, he looked good today. I mean, he averaged, what, 5.75 yards a touch, even with broken ribs?
Yeah, 5'6 running.
5'6, okay. And so that's not bad, but I don't see it. I mean, can he be a feature back? No. If you want to have a stable of guys, can he be one of them? Sure,
yeah.
But I don't buy it.
I think he's a specialty back. I think that's what he's going to be. I don't think you can give him the ball 20 times a game. I think you have to have a second guy like Aaron Jones. It's almost like, you know, what Atlanta does. They don't overwork Dante Freeman.
Or Coleman,
right. And they keep them, or Devontae, I think, Devontae. They keep them healthy and fresh. And Montgomery, what was it, his third carry, something like that he got hurt? Was it his first carry?
It was his first carry.
First carry,
he breaks his ribs, and then he stayed on the field for four or five more carries, and then eventually dropped out before the end of the first drive.
Yeah. He's got to learn to protect himself better. You really shouldn't be taking shots in your ribs. You should be taking shots in your shoulder pads.
So, you know, our discussion here and our sort of agreement that he's a rotation guy or a specialty guy, that then begs the question, are the Packers willing to swallow their pride and acknowledge that? Because, I mean, there's times when McCarthy has been stubborn with certain things over mm-hmm. the years. Will they just say, look, we committed to this guy. We made him do all this work in the offseason. We're going to live and die with it.
Well, I think that will be answered by itself because they're going to have – Jones is going to have to be their starter, I would guess. You know, there's always a chance Montgomery's injury isn't that serious. I remember James Starks played with broken ribs and wore a flak jacket. And I don't remember how long it was that he was out before he was able to play. It's really the degree – a lot of times with ribs, it's how much pain there is. And I remember talking to Nelson just a couple weeks ago. I was talking to him about that, and I said, come on, let's fess up now. how hurt were you in that Atlanta game? And he said, I swear to God, I had no pain going into that game. He said, I got hit a couple times and it hurt, but he said it wasn't that bad. So I don't know we don't know how bad Montgomery's ribs are.
And the other part of it, too, is even if there's not a ton of pain, the jaggedness of the break is something you have to take
if
into
that's
consideration,
what happened,
too.
I mean, if it's just a cracked
right.
rib, then it's, you know, then it's a pain tolerance.
Exactly.
Thing. And a lot of times they call broken ribs, it's more like the cartilage that gets damaged, and they call those broken ribs. So I don't really, you know, I'm not a doctor. I just play one on this podcast, but I guess I can't make a prediction on him, but I'm saying here that they're going to be forced to play Aaron Jones, and then it's up to him. You know, he may just take the job, and they'll go, you know, he's too valuable. We have to keep running him.
Now let me throw this scenario out there. Their next game is 10 days away. They go to Dallas mm-hmm. on October 8th. Let's just, for the argument's sake, say that Montgomery doesn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that Jamal Williams' knee is a little messed up because Jamal Williams got hurt.
Right.
Can they really go into a game with Aaron Jones and Devontae Mays and that's it?
Yes, absolutely. And you use Aaron Ripkowski as your third down back because you need a blocker. Now, Aaron Jones, I'll give him credit. I didn't watch every single pass play, but I saw one where they blitzed and he picked it up and stone the guy pretty well. Unfortunately, I think for the Packers on that one, I think Justin McCray got beat and Rodgers got hit. But yes, absolutely they can. Rookies can be running backs in the NFL. Rookies can be successful running backs in the NFL.
Well, they'll be going into a city, Dallas, that has the most successful rookie running back from last season, Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's going to be a game where, you know, you'd think the Packers would like to be able to control the clock a little bit and keep Elliott off the field. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the only injuries on offense, but is there anything else on the offensive side of the ball you want to discuss before we switch over to defense?
I'd like to discuss Martellus Bennett a little bit.
Yeah, you wrote that story about the tight ends in Thursday's paper, right?
Yeah. And while, you know, I was a proponent of Lance Kendricks being a part of the offense, and he was a little bit, got a little bit more. He only had one catch for no yards. But more and more you can see that they're dying to have someone who can run down the field, and Bennett is not it. Bennett had 6 catches for 39 yards. I mean, he had, and 26 of those came on that crossing route,
right?
Which was helped, I'm just going to say, you know, was helped by Kendricks actually running underneath that route and drawing some of the attention away from Bennett.
So aside from that, it's what, 5 catches for 13 yards?
Right.
And so, you know, look, it's early in the season. The guy can certainly turn it around, and that's sort of what he told you in one of the quotes that you used in your story.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm just going to say it. I've been really unimpressed by him since he's gotten here.
As a receiver.
Not just a receiver, the effort, too. I mean, the guy loafs around. I don't think he – I don't know. I've seen guys play harder. I'll put it that way.
I don't know if it's that he doesn't play hard or he has that type of style that looks like he's loafing. I don't know, because I saw him make some nice blocks today.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
When he wants to, he can take a guy out of a play, and he's smart. He's a smart blocker. But I want to watch, you know, I really need to watch the replay of the game to see what it was, how they used him and what they did. But absolutely, he's not getting it done as a receiver, and I think they need someone with more speed. I think they need to sort of reverse the roles. Kendricks should be opening stuff up for Bennett, you know. He should be running some stuff down the middle of the field, and maybe that opens some stuff for Bennett in the short in the short areas.
Yeah, I don't really know what has changed. You know, during OTAs, he was a world beater, and him and Rodgers were making these tremendous plays every day in practice. It seemed like they had another one. I guess when I talked about his effort a little bit, it was more based on some things I saw in training camp and some things in the games. But in camp, you know, there were times where he didn't seem too interested in practice, where he would question some of the things that they were doing.
Yeah.
And we talked about that, too.
Sure.
During the game, I just think there's times where he just does not really make much of an effort to get back to the huddle quickly and things like that. I don't know. I just think he could play faster with more urgency, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's just one of those guys that I don't think it's malicious. I think it's he just goes by the beat of his own drum, you
Fair
know?
Enough.
And he does, but he does need to pick up his play, and they need to figure out how to use him effectively, because they haven't. And, you know, New England did, and that was just last year. So there's got to be something there still.
You asked him some pretty pointed questions when you did the reporting for that story. Mm-hmm. Did he get defensive at all, or was he able to acknowledge?
Yeah, he's a little defensive, but you know, he kept bringing up things like he doesn't know Aaron Rodgers very well. He and Kendricks are both learning about the scramble drill. He said they're still trying to figure that out. He said there's been no rhythm because, you know, 1 week he's chipping all the time and not getting out in his routes. You know, there's something to be said for that. Our sports editor asked me, after reading that story, well, didn't Jared Cook get off to kind of a slow start? And he did the first two games. And then he was starting, he had that 15-yard catch against Detroit, and then he got knocked out. So he
with
didn't
the
play
ankle
again.
Injury, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't play again until Washington. And then when he came back for Washington, he was a world beater.
Right.
So I don't know if it's comparable, if you can say that, because Cook struggled for two games. And then I thought in that Detroit game he caught this ball 15-yarder down the seam, and it seemed like, okay, he's breaking out. And then he got hurt. So I don't really know.
I don't know either. We'll have to see how things play out for Bennett, but definitely not as much production as I think they would have expected from a guy with that much, you know, physical ability.
Yeah, I want to see him break a tackle. Have you seen him break one tackle?
Not really. I mean, I've seen him run over guys along the sideline when he goes out of bounds, but
yeah.
I haven't seen – I guess there's been a lot of the short routes that he's run, which you pointed out, a lot of these hook routes, these little short things. It has reminded me a lot of all the criticism every game that Richard Rodgers got in 2015, where he would catch these little three-yard outs and get tackled immediately.
Yeah, they would just flip his legs out from under. You know, one thing I did note in the live blog – that kind of occurred to me was that nobody plays him nobody plays him off the ball. They're not worried about him running by them. So
what do you mean off the ball?
Well, they're not giving him a cushion. So as soon as he catches the ball, they're right there.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Okay.
So, you know, if you're worried about a guy running by you, then you play off him a little bit.
Right.
And you wait and see. But these guys, they're just, you know, taking their shots at him right away, and so there's no cushion there.
So should we switch over to defense?
Sure.
All right, so I think everything really got started on the first play from scrimmage for the Bears, as I mentioned, where Clay Matthews comes off the right side there. The strip sack on Mike Glennon, it's recovered by Jake Ryan, and soon enough, it's 7-0. Mm-hmm. So first of all, what did you think of Clay Matthews today, again in that sort of premier role with Nick Perry being utilized sparingly? And then how did they use the outside linebackers in general?
Well, the lesson in that is that Clay Matthews can still kick a tight end's butt.
Yeah.
Which is what he did on that play. He hasn't been as successful against tackles, but he just kicked the crap out of that.
Deion Sims stood no chance.
Yeah. Remember we were talking about blocking tight ends, I think, just the other day, and that
you said
tight ends
there's only
don't
a,
block very
there's
well.
Only a couple really good ones in the league.
I thought Matthews played hard. I didn't see a whole lot of pass rush without blitzing.
No, I agree.
I saw the one from Matthews, and then after that I didn't see Glennon getting pressured all that much until they brought some heat. And I was a little bit surprised at that. I thought they'd be able to get a little bit more, have a little bit more success pass rushing. But, you know, Perry only played sparingly. Ahmad Brooks played some. All in all, not a really great performance from the outside linebackers.
No, it wasn't. And then, you know, they mixed in a couple other looks that we've seen before with, you know, Dean Lowry filling in for Mike Daniels in the third down rush unit. So they had Brooks on the field, they had Perry, they had Matthews, and they had Lowry. Sometimes Fackrell was mixed in there as well. But overall, I didn't think it was anything to write home about for a performance. They had three quarterback hits and one sack. Matthews had the only sack of the game.
Yeah, I think if you were to ask me to be Dom Capers here and give my Domalogue to this game, I would say, well, we were there to stop the run first and foremost.
Yep.
Yeah, they played their base defense more than they've played it at all this year.
Probably the last couple of years.
Yeah, and they were completely focused on stopping Jordan Howard. And it's sometimes hard to pass rush when your first assignment is to stop the run. So that could have had something to do with it. That's probably an excuse, but, you know, they're not quite the same team when they're rushing out of their base defense.
You know, we haven't really talked about this player a lot, but I think Quentin Dial has been a pretty solid addition for them. I think that for a guy that doesn't really give you any pass rush, he is very hard to move against the run.
Yeah.
And there's a number of times where, you know, he's not necessarily slicing into the backfield or anything like we've seen Daniels do, but he's able to hold the point at the line of scrimmage. And then when guys go by him, he's able to, and when I say guys, I mean the running back, when a guy gets lateral with him, he's able to disengage from whatever lineman is against him and make the tackle. And, you know, he's playing a lot of snaps in this base defense.
He is.
And I think that, you know, come the end of the season, that's going to be a pretty shrewd signing for the Packers.
I think so, too. I talked to him after the game because I was going to write about all the backups who had to play. Then I just end up focusing on the offensive line. But I talked to him for a bit, and he, you know, he's basically said, well, I'm a veteran. I know how to play the game. And so it's not that big of an adjustment for him to come in, which he's done in a short order. But the other thing he said is he feels kind of reborn. You know, he's playing for a winning team. And he's back playing for a 3-4 defense. And that's what he was, you know, that's where he was successful. And I think he's kind of finding his place. And, man, you can't have too many good run stoppers.
No.
I mean, he may not give you what you want. You know, he's not going to replace Mike Daniels as a pass rusher. But, shoot, we came into this season, you and I, talking about how they don't really have much depth at nose tackle.
Yeah.
And I got to give him credit. Yeah, he's been pretty solid.
In terms of some other things that jumped out on the defense, there were a couple injury scares there. You know, Josh Jones dropped out of the game with a back injury and then returned. And Blake Martinez was evaluated for a concussion and eventually returned. But the one that I think could be potentially problematic is, you know, the injury to Joe Thomas. Now, is he a crucial player for this defense? No. But he's been their dime linebacker, and it's a smart player that the Packers tend to, you know, believe in certain situations. He drops out with an ankle injury, really couldn't put much weight on it at all walking off the field. You know, they get Jake Ryan back today, but sort of, I don't know, what do you think of what they're doing lately with the inside backers, and how much does Joe Thomas, you know, matter at this point with Josh Jones in there?
You know, I was just going to say, if I'm Capers, I just think about making Josh Jones my dime linebacker. Now, he is in the dime, and he's functioning somewhat as a linebacker. He'll go in the slot and cover guys in the slot. He'll blitz. So if you did put him there, then you'd have to put another corner in the game, and I'm not sure who that would be at this point. You know, maybe it would be Rollins.
We'll get to the corners in a second.
Yeah. Bottom line is Josh Jones has to be on the field somewhere. Joe Thomas, they can get away with.
Yeah.
I mean, They like him on third down. He made a really nice pass breakup. Pulled the ball out of Bellamy, was that?
Yeah, 45 yards downfield or whatever it was, too.
So he's an asset there.
And on special teams.
Yeah. They won't miss him in the run game as long as they have Ryan and Martinez healthy.
When when I saw some of the things that they were doing today, the first thing that jumped out to me was they finally got an interception. I mean, they got two of them today, one from Clinton Dix, one from Bryce. But it comes with a caveat because I don't know who the heck Glennon was throwing to on either of those. I mean, it honestly looked like he was throwing more to the Packers than it was for anything else. I'm interested to see how this influences both guys because we sort of talked about it the other day. I don't think Clinton Dix has had a great start to the season.
No.
And maybe this can kickstart him. And I think Bryce has really struggled this season. He made a terrible play today on a really poor angle that allowed a big catch and run by the tight end Miller. And he comes up with an interception. So maybe this can jolt them a little bit.
Well, the best thing that can be said for both guys is that when a ball's thrown in their chest, they can catch it.
The same cannot be said of Ladarius Gunter, Morgan Burnett, others.
Yeah, so... mazel tov to them because they just did what they were supposed to do. And Clinton Dix might want to get down a little bit once someone's got his legs wrapped up, you know.
It's a good way to get hurt or get the ball stripped.
But I'm going to bring back the painful moment for all you guys out there. It doesn't matter to me, but could you imagine if it was Clinton Dix who had picked off Russell Wilson in that championship game? He would have run it all the way back. We saw that today. He would try to score a touchdown today. You know, just thought I'd say that. Ruin everybody's day.
I was on a couch in my apartment in Memphis watching that game, so I didn't pay attention to the particulars. But
okay. Well, you remember Morgan Burnett went down on an eight.
And Peppers told him to, right?
Peppers told him to,
yeah.
But Clinton Dix would have given Peppers the finger and just gone and taken it. I maintain. Well,
we saw him and Peppers and Daniels go at it.
Yeah, that's right.
For the next season.
That's right.
So
anyway.
All right, now let's talk about this cornerback situation.
Because
this is one of the weirdest things.
Why don't you detail this? You can.
Okay. So the way the Packers started with Devon House out with the quad injury, they played a ton of base, as we mentioned, which means only two corners. So on one side you had Kevin King, who I guarantee will be a starter the rest of the season as long as he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Demaryius Randall on the other. And Randall didn't do anything too poorly or too awesome until late in the second quarter when he gives up this touchdown pass. And then the sort of prototypical Demaryius Randall poor body language kicked in. So he gives up this touchdown on a play where he was in the slot and the receiver sort of came out to the back corner of the end zone and he kind of just got blown off the line of scrimmage. He was never even really close. He throws up his arms. He looks frustrated.
Well, he turns around like, what? You know, it's not
my fault.
Where is my help?
He's looking at Kevin King. To me, it had to be man coverage, and I don't know if he thought it was something else.
Yeah.
But I think it was man.
I'm going
to
tell you what I think happened. I don't know because he wasn't there and nobody would really talk about it. But there was probably a call made in the secondary and he didn't get it somehow. Everybody else is playing man and he's playing zone.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but, you know, how do you not get the call? Kevin King got it.
He was further away from the middle of the field.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things where you should be anticipating what the call is. You know, you should really not even have to know what the call is,
right?
Because it's so obvious that it's going to be that call. The Packers always play man down inside the 10-yard line. So I don't know what he was thinking. He came back to the bench. He threw his helmet down. He sat by himself. I'm not sure who the assistant coach is who was down on the field. It's not Joe Witt because he's up
in the box. I know Perry's down there. I don't know if it was Perry that tried to cool him off a little.
I forgot. Someone came over to talk to him about what happened. Kevin King came over to talk to him, and he got up, you know?
It was very bizarre. That sort of kickstarted a weird half hour in Demaryius Randall's life. So as you mentioned, he came over. He got pissed. He dropped his helmet. He was walking around with his baseball cap on, sort of like talking to himself, pissed at the world. Then he goes and sits on the bench, and Devon House comes over to him, and House basically said he was trying to tell the guy, look, Deion Sanders gave up touchdowns. Darrell Revis gave up touchdowns. It happens. You can't, you know, totally lose your cool about it. Meanwhile, Josh Hawkins goes in there and plays a really good second half. Five tackles, three pass breakups, right. and House said he was thrilled with the way that Hawkins played. And then things get really weird. Finish the rest of the situation.
Well,
here.
Yeah, you know, to just clarify a little bit, I think he got ticked and sat on the bench after halftime, because didn't he get benched after
yes,
halftime?
Correct. He
so
came
they
out.
Come back out.
Right. The touchdown was right before halftime.
Yeah.
And then they come out in the third quarter, and it's Hawkins and King instead of him.
Right. And so the next thing I know, I look down at the bench. He's there with his arms sprawled out, away. And this is while they're on defense. He's sitting on the bench.
The opposite side.
Everybody else stands by the coaches because they're going to call your number and say you're in. And he was sitting opposite side of the field.
40, 50 yards away.
Yeah. What had his helmet, so I don't think he was injured.
Packers said there was no injury.
Yeah. So he was clearly sulking. That's when I saw House talking.
Exactly.
To him.
Yep.
And he never moved. Then the next thing I know, I can't remember if someone on the blog said, "Where's Randall?" or whatever. And I'm like, "Where is Randall?" You know, start looking around, and he's not there.
Yeah, and our columnist, Pete Doherty, said the same thing. So we all had our binoculars. We were looking for a few minutes, couldn't find him. And so then I went over and asked Jason Waller, head of the PR department. I said, what's the deal? Is he hurt? And he said, no, he's just not on the field. Mm. I said, so did he get sent to the locker room, or did he storm off? He said, I don't know, but he is not on the field with the team. And that's how it finished. He wasn't out there for basically the last quarter and a half, or at least the last quarter of the game.
Yeah.
And the Packers said that it was an internal matter, and McCarthy said it would be handled internally. He wasn't in the locker room after the game, and House and Hawkins wouldn't speculate about what it was.
I never saw him leave. I mean,
I didn't either.
Just walk away? Or?
I have no idea. Nobody knows. But he was there, and then he wasn't. And it was at least
did he disappear in that blue tent?
I don't know.
You know, like he went in there and then they transported him somewhere?
Maybe he went into the first row and just sat in the bleachers, had a beer.
Because he also, I don't know if you saw this, but he had one of those capes on, that green jacket
yes.
on.
It started pouring again late in the...
Is that what it was?
Well, it was like, yeah, so like the second wave of showers came through and he put on this big green jacket. And then I looked down and the big green jacket was gone. So I have no idea what happened.
He disappeared.
He wasn't in the locker room after the game. Hawkins and House said, oh, I don't know why he was in the locker room. Nobody would say anything.
I'm guessing that McCarthy sent him to the locker room. If he wasn't going to be part of the action, wasn't going to be over by supporting his defensive players, take it in the locker room.
The only other person I thought that could have sent him there was Witt. Because
well,
if
Witt.
He's up in the booth and
yes.
he sees the negative
yes.
body language
right.
and he says, look, just... go away.
Yeah.
You're not helping us. You're being a little brat. So I don't know. That's going to be something that is really, really interesting to see both in the short term tomorrow if there's any sort of, I don't know if they would announce a suspension or something like that if they wanted to put him in timeout, so to speak. Or
they could release him.
They certainly could.
You know, I don't know. He's not going to play anytime soon.
Not when House comes back,
injuries.
Too.
Yeah. King's a starter. Boy, he's ruining such a good thing. He's a starter. He's
yeah.
a starter because of House being out and one bad play.
And he's probably the guy they would have put on the field in the dime as a fourth corner.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with it next week. But
How do his teammates accept him back after him just all but quitting?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I asked you. I think I asked you up in the game, in the press box during the game. I said, you know, could they cut a guy over this, or what happens? To me, the biggest thing is that if you're a first round pick from just a couple years ago, and you're young, and you're known to have this weird bravado that is clearly at times not in touch with reality,
mm-hmm.
saying he's the best, one of the best corners in the league, all these things that, you know, it's one thing to be confident, it's another thing to be a little bit nuts. And all of a sudden, he just quits on you. And it's not like this is an undrafted guy that has been fighting his tail off and just can't handle the pressure. This is a first-round pick from just a couple years ago. I would be livid if I'm somebody else.
Yeah, and if I'm a veteran, if I'm Kevin King, I'm like, who is this guy?
You exactly.
Know? You know, Quentin Rollins, for all his mistakes and whatever, he would never do something like that.
And this isn't high school. I mean, these are big boys. Yeah. You know, you can't just quit on a team or throw a temper tantrum.
I mean, where's Ladarius Gunter? Bring him back, you know?
Well, that was one of the things. I overheard one of the other writers in the press box saying, look, I mean, Gunter couldn't run. Mm-hmm. He certainly had some shortcomings. But the guy played harder than anybody else on the field.
Yeah. You know, in fact, remember when Joe Witt was talking about Gunter a couple of weeks ago and just effusive with his praise? But at one point he goes, you know, there's guys who will whine about if you tell them they have to go and cover a certain guy.
Yeah.
And the first thing I was thinking in my head was, oh, Demaryius Randall? You know? And he was talking about how Gunter never did that. Whatever the assignment was, he went and did it. And I'm thinking, you know, was this a veiled shot at Demaryius Randall? I don't know. Maybe it was.
There's still some time, you know, for these guys to turn it around. I mean, it took Nick Perry a few years. But boy, that 2015 draft is starting to look really bad for Ted Thompson at the
really
top.
Is.
You talk about Randall in the first round. Right. You talk about Rollins in the second round. Who else was in that draft?
So Blake Martinez was in that draft.
No, Blake Martinez was last year. He was a rookie last
year. Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
We're talking about 15. So you're looking at Hundley. Who knows if that's going to work out to be anything. Ripkowski, fine. That's an okay selection. Who else is here in 15? Jake Ryan, jury's still out there.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a world-beating selection. Christian Ringo's not here anymore. Montgomery in the third round. That, I think, is
still up in the air for a third round.
So, I mean, in total, that is not looking like a very successful draft for Ted Thompson.
That's a terrible draft.
Again, still time for these guys to turn it around, but I don't see it with a lot of those guys.
He's lucky he made up for it this year with Jones and King.
Jones and King and Montrevious Adams could turn out to be something.
Yeah,
You never know. Even Aaron Jones, you know, the fifth-round pick.
Heck yeah.
Anything else, or can we finally go home now that it's 3:05?
Let's see. Was there anything else on defense that needed to be talked about? I did think that there were some times when Glennon was able to move the ball on them better than I thought. Like, their coverage wasn't all that great, but
no, I agree. And I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, if they were just so loaded up against the run that they were willing to concede a little bit. I don't know. But Glennon is bad. He is not good. I don't think he's going to start many more games for the Bears.
I don't think so either. Not if John Fox wants to keep his job.
$18.5 million guaranteed to start 3, 4, maybe 5 games. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yep.
I'm out of information. All right. It's time to go to sleep. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast Friday morning. The Packers now have their mini bye week, so there is nothing on Saturday, nothing on Sunday, nothing on Monday, and they get back to work on Tuesday. So we're going to take a little break as well.
Yes. So listen to this podcast over and over again, because that's why we made it super long.
Yeah, I don't know when the next one will be.
Take it in 4 quarters with a rain delay in between.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
All right, so we will see you guys next week. Have a nice weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.